So coming into Melbourne and doing a market has given them a sort of, it's like the almost like the bread and butter, and then they go off and do perhaps, you know, we've created an online store, as have so many others, and been able to keep up the contact with people and little supply chains that we've all been able to build.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. When the restaurant industry went into lockdown, food retail boomed. With supermarkets allowed to trade, it meant more people were cooking at home. But not everyone likes to get their groceries from the big supermarkets. Some prefer a greater connection to the food they eat. Farmers markets all across the country provide that connection. But with the confusion over public gatherings and restrictions, what impact has that had on those who like to shop at farmers' markets and the producers who earn a crust as stallholders? Miranda Sharp is the founder and director of Melbourne Farmers Markets. Miranda, how are you going?
I'm very well, thanks, Huck. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're glad to have you here. You've had quite a turbulent 6 or 7 months. The restrictions and rules are a bit like shifting sand at the moment. What's the current situation for the farmers markets in Melbourne?
At the moment, and dare I say it, it feels a little calmer, more stable. But mind you, as soon as I've thought that over the few months, then there'll be some change, some upheaval that, you know, we've learned to roll with. And of course, we're pretty philosophical that we've just got to suck it up like everyone else. And we're overall, we're incredibly thankful to just being able to keep trading as much as we have been able to. But, you know, it has been incredibly challenging, and there've been times that were it not for the number of people who rely on us, it would have been a lot easier on our on the demand and the stresses and frankly the mental health on our front line, as well as the sort of economic pressures and so on, to have you know gone into hibernation, because the sheer hard work has just been like never I've experienced before, and that's saying something, because I'm a dinosaur in this field, in hospo and food and in Victoria, and you know, like all of us, we're working pretty bloody hard.
There's been many hurdles over the last 7 months for the farmers markets in Melbourne, and a lot of hoops to jump through. But there was one period of time with a lot of confusion where the government shut down the markets and then decided to change their mind only a few hours later. What sort of impact did that have on all of the various farmers markets?
Look, initially, to be honest, it was disbelief. We had been so vigilant this was the third week of August, I think it was. So since March, you know, we'd engaged all sorts of protocols and precautions and signage and infrastructure and sanitizer and you name it, we had it, and turned from being the welcoming, wonderful, shared environment that we love and we cherish about markets, we all do, to being a very matter-of-fact organization with protocols and stripping our markets of all the wonderful stuff. So having done all that, it was sheer disbelief that we were suddenly taken, out of the permitted work environments and essential food services to be literally with no warning in the exclusion category, and no explanation and no contact whatsoever with us. And it turned out that after, with a little investigation, which, you know, was not easily forthcoming, I must say, that it was the behaviour of a single market not an accredited farmers market the weekend before on the sunny Saturday afternoon, that, you know, the irresistible stuff to let a few extra people in and to hang around, and we were all taken down by it. So that was pretty gut-wrenching to feel, firstly, to sort of realise that, well, we really don't count, do we? We really are pretty anonymous in this sphere.
So how quickly did the government reverse their decision in regards to that?
Well, we found out first thing on the Friday morning, and finally it was overturned at the 20th hour on the Friday night.
Wow.
It was a big day. It was a very big day.
What sort of impact was that having on all the stallholders? They would have pulled all of their vegetables out of the ground, and, you know, what can you tell us what happened in that period?
That's right. Well, it was because every single business that we deal with, which is, there would have been on that weekend, we had two markets on the Saturday and one on the Sunday. So around 100 businesses, or, you know, those who overlap but are doing all three or one of three markets. So each one is different, and we can never just do a blanket response to any one without the next one being different. So, you know, I know that people were already in Melbourne because of the lockdown. They had to get in, earlier than the curfew. There are people who are really unfamiliar with Melbourne. They're anxious about coming into Melbourne sometimes. And all of the producers, I think I can speak for all of them. It's a big ask in under any circumstances, let alone under these. And, you know, every piece of advice is, you know, stay away, stay out of Melbourne, don't move around. And here we are, you know, each and every business being doing exactly the opposite to keep trading and to keep us fed. So people were on the road, people were, you know, quietly horrified at home. People had picked, people had baked, people had, had staff, were sitting in their vans, or furiously offloading to other where they could, because they thought that all was lost. And, it was just a debacle of... because there was just nothing we could do to assure them one way or another that it was on or it was off. In fact, when it got to 6 o'clock at night in the evening, and we hadn't even had our meeting, the sort of pivotal meeting that ended up being the one that got us over the line, we pulled the pin. We said we can't be, you know, this is rude to just keep people dangling. We have to concede defeat. We have to let them know. And then, you know, within a couple of hours, we were back on the phone saying, no, you know, if you can make it, you come on down. And then the weekend was just a tumultuous couple of days weather-wise. But I'll tell you, we've never been happier, I think, to, you know, stand in pouring rain all day.
Farmers markets have had challenges with the big supermarkets, irrelevant of COVID. What did it feel like in that experience, being sort of classed as non-essential when the supermarkets are full?
Yeah, it was pretty gutting, because that very week it had been announced that, I can't remember which, had announced, you know, just monumental profits. And we all know why, because we're all kind of herding in there, and, you know, whether it was hoarding toilet paper or bunkering down, that's just what the majority of us did. And it's typical. I mean, it's typical of our usual behaviour. It's about 95% of us who shop exclusively at supermarkets, sadly. But, it was very demoralising, to say the least, given what we'd persevered with for the last few months.
You deal with some extraordinary producers and bakers and all sorts of people with the farmers markets. What was the impact on them given the restrictions and the fact that it's their livelihood, but you just couldn't quite get the numbers through that you would normally get?
Oh, I think over by and large, it's sheer gratitude. To them, we have become very, very relevant because so much, sadly, of HOSPO and a lot of their usual custom has disappeared through this. So it became very essential to have as a lifeline. And to, you know, when we've all kind of created new opportunities through on the you know, spin of a coin, to try and survive. So coming into Melbourne and doing a market has given them a sort of, it's like the almost like the bread and butter, and then they go off and do perhaps you know, we've created an online store, as have so many others, and been able to keep up the contact with people and little supply chains that we've all been able to build, that otherwise probably would have been disconnected completely because of their main supply being lost.
You're the founder and director of the Melbourne Farmers Markets. Can you take us back to those?
I'm the dinosaur.
Can you take us back to those early days and why you started them and what it was like?
Oh, they were very heady days. I've been around for a long, long time. Firstly, as a caterer in the 80s and 90s, a little business that was, you know, trying to find a way to differentiate ourselves in a sort of cluster of small businesses doing a similar thing, you know, doing spring carnival, doing boardroom lunches and weddings and all the gear, and we couldn't buy from individual producers. We always seemed to have to go through a distributor, and it was a pretty impersonal experience, and didn't allow us to kind of carve our own way because everyone was doing the same sort of, you know, with their where our ingredients were coming from. And then my next sort of incarnation in the biz was exactly the opposite in writing for The Age, for Epicure. And from a different perspective, I sort of felt the same sentiment that we were just disconnected, further and further disconnected from our primary producers. And writing as a food journo, even though I was sort of moonlighting with no qualifications, I was finding that it was all about, you know, there was a lot about the press release and a lot about the packaging and a lot about and it was in the days as the sort of celebrity nature of the industry was developing, which is, you know, just fantastic that we're able to we have this diversity in Victoria and Australia. But I personally think it's, without any swipe at anyone else, I think it's really heavily weighted in one direction. And where would our industry be if we didn't have our primary producers? So I felt that it was time to, you know, having been lucky enough to travel and enjoy the spoils of a market culture everywhere else, that it was time that, you know, the growers themselves had a place to take the credit and the full dollar for what they do. And that's even within our incredible market culture in Melbourne, you know, with the Vicky Market and Preston and Dandenong and everywhere and other permanent markets and all sorts of other things, but just nowhere where you were standing behind what you grew or what you made, you know, directly and directly talking to your customer. So it was at the time when the Collingwood Children's Farm was pretty desperately fighting off the residential development and a huge community upsurge to oppose that, which thankfully was one. And so I knocked on their door, and they were sort of almost so broken that they didn't have the strength to say, God, no, you know, what would we, what are we letting ourselves in for? And so we started, and it's it was a very proud day for me when it was acknowledged that financially the farmers market saved the farm some years later, and the premier Steve Brax at the time premier announced when the government gave back the land to the people, the St Helier Street area, including the Abbotsford Convent now, you know, that was on a second Saturday of the month, and the crowd was there in force, and you know, so it's, yeah, I'm a very happy Melburnian to have you know, been a part of that very, very big mobilisation for such an important outcome.
Well, it's incredible what you've achieved. There's, you know, Coburg, Carlton, Alphington, Collingwood, Abbotsford Gasworks. I mean, a little earlier you mentioned about accredited farmers markets as opposed to one that wasn't, that perhaps broke the restrictions earlier. How important is that accreditation, and what does it mean?
It's a sort of strange environment. I think I'm naturally a bit of a rule breaker and a you know, pusher of boundaries, but in this territory, I think there's an environment that would be so easily manipulated because we have no regulation or legislation governing us, which I'm not sure whether that would be a hell, you know, a curse or advantageous, but simply there is none for farmers markets because they're, by law, they're common use words. So we, in the very early days, we sort of could see that this was, there was a likelihood that it could be either really commercialised or really, you know, really bastardised by having it just anything goes. And then how would we stand up next to a greengrocer or the Vicky Market and say, you know, we're not just having a piece of your action, we're doing something quite different, and there's a reason for it. So together as a group of like-mindeds, we thought it was pretty straightforward that we just had to have some boundaries that we put upon ourselves to say, this is who we are. It's not, and it now does have state government recognition, and it's, you know, it's an ACCC registered structure, but it's still opt-in. You can still start a farmers market, you know, next door, and have no. It's not about management credentials. It's about the substance of the market that we just feel has to be transparent, and that is about being able to know where each and every, why each and every stallholder is there, and you know, you can be caught out, you can make mistakes. We certainly have, but it's acting on them and being as true to the you know, to the principle as you possibly can be, and that's really the guts of it, and out of that has come a pretty robust system. It's not perfect by any means, but if it got more traction, it would certainly have much more reach into how a local food, how, you know, a farmers market environment would work within a larger local food sector. And there's certainly international comparisons that are really worth you know, recognizing, because they work and they have had such growth. They're a lot older, you know, an environment than ours, but they have such a place in a local food system. So that's what we're striving for. It's a long haul.
Has there been any producers or farmers or stallholders that have been with you from the early days that you've seen grown and blossom?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There are still people from day one who are there from, you know, they were at Collingwood Children's Farm on the 10th of October 2002. And we didn't know what the hell we were getting ourselves in for or how much hard. But, you know, it's just amazing. And they are dear, dear friends. And, you know, people have come and gone. We've lost people. We've seen people move on to great, great things, you know, or a new and next generation. That's incredibly exciting. We've got, you know, household names and rock stars amongst us. And then there are just really people, a lot of people who just prefer to do what they do and be experts in you know, growing their product and couldn't give a rat's about anything else. But they're, you know, incredibly proud. And they are the real rock stars, I reckon, sort of, because they don't seek it. They just do it.
You're obviously very, very passionate and it's a great love of yours, farmers markets. But how important are they to our society and what's at their core?
I think that, yes, I am. I'm a dead set, die hard evangelist, but, and I'm the first to admit that, and it comes at a cost to anyone who knows me and gets me started on the topic. But in perspective, I think that it's really only, you know, it's only one part. They are not the salvation to our problems in our food system. And it's why we've fought really hard to diversify and to bring and to coordinate and collaborate with lots of different community food organisations, with industry, with media, with everyone, anyone else, because we're in this together. It's one of the few things in life that we have to do, and you know, it's a sort of, you can boil it down to that move, you know, use it or lose it kind of thing. And if we don't look after our local agriculture, whether it's, you know, signing up to a CSA or buying from a greengrocer, an independent greengrocer, or, you know, dropping into a farm gate or going to a farmer's market, it all adds up to that little chink in the strength of our sticking at it together, because the challenges are, you know, so outweigh the rationale, probably, really. But I think it's now, you know, we can see the changes in supermarket culture, just in language, in their sort of, you know, even in the superficial stuff of the setting, you know, that it's become, there's a sort of, it's like the jolly farmer is somewhere there out the back or, you know, it's this, you're meant to pick up, that's the way the spiel has developed. But, and I think the whole sort of home, the pride in cooking at home and cooking, you know, more the way we talk about traditional stuff and cultures and embracing diversity, so importantly in a country that, you know, it's what we say we do. So, you know, food is such a conduit to opening doors and sharing our background and our future together. So, but farmers markets are, you know, just a part of it.
It's been a real time of reflection for many people, and people have reevaluated what's important. Do you think farmers markets will become more important moving forward for our society?
I hope so. I think, then again, you know, we're constantly reassessing it as other things come in. You know, is this model still relevant? Should we be changing? How do we turn more into being, you know, accessible, convenient, affordable, and everywhere? You know, we get a lot of, you know, flack that we're exclusive and elitist, and which is just too hard to counter when you're trying to be trying to provide a platform for people to set their own pricing and structure, because the individuals are different from the next small business, then to be told, you know, that something is too expensive there because that's the sort of landed price. But then you go to a big store or a glamour shop or a high-end restaurant or something, you don't go in and, you know, either you walk in those doors and you go, is this value for money? Yes, no. You've always got the comeback, sure. But to have a slight at a producer who's worked their guts out to be there and to bring it to you and done their own, you know, picking, packing, transporting, marketing, oh, and throw in a bit of social media, you know, chutzpah, you know, why wouldn't we be paying a retail price? And a healthy one at that, given that it's got, you know, demonstrable animal, you know, ethics and integrity behind it. We're happy to take the knocks where it's valid, but I'm pretty tired of you know, trying to having to justify what we're doing all the time, when really what we're trying to do is one thing. We can't do it all, but we're trying to do what we do well, and that has a reason for it. But in saying that, then we're also, one of the things that's been really making us tick this year has been we're a founding partner in Moving Feast, which is an initiative of a whole lot of social enterprise rat bags in the who we're very proud to call our mates in this town, who've been really focused on emergency food relief first and foremost when things were really in crisis, and making sure that both vulnerable Victorians and primary producers were matched together with the shortest supply chain. And for us to be included in that, and that our producers valued in being part of those who were losing, you know, in hospitality losses, was a great shot in the arm, I suppose, to be a, and also an incredibly valuable piece that kept us trading and operating, because we had a reason for, as I said earlier, for those people to still come to Melbourne, because they were able to supply in quantity into industry making food and supplying produce boxes, like the awful weekend of the North Melbourne and Flemington lockdown tower, where we were able to get all that produce in there within, you know, I think 48 hours, 1,000 fresh food parcels. And that was just, it felt amazing to be a part of that response that was so, had such a, talk about a double, is it a triple bottom line we talk about? You know, it had such good coming out of it. And it was all driven by, there was no request for it. It was put forward by the social enterprises, and particularly driven by Street, the and the fabulous Beck Scott. But, you know, an incredible thing to work together on. And it's things like that that I think have just, that's what I'm taking away from all this, is things have changed. We're not doing things solo, if ever we were.
This period of time has taken a lot of energy from you, and it's been quite full on trying to look after all of the farmers' markets and ensure their longevity. What's it been like for you personally?
I've never been more anxious, I suppose, in my life, primarily because of just trying to hold so much together and feeling so responsible for our crew, working, you know, beyond their capacity if they weren't working hard enough in the first place, but and our community, but also just feeling a part of the part of hospitality that was just so crippled and terrible, has been a terrible strain, I think, on us all. Yeah, I'm sure my family have certainly suffered, my friends, for my madness in the last few months, but I can't apologise for that, because it's the only response to have had was just to try that bit harder. And strangely, coming out of it, well, if that's where we are now, who knows, I feel incredibly energised again. I feel so determined and so kind of, I've got renewed faith in what we can do now and do together, as long as we pull together and as long as we are able to turn a whole lot of rhetoric into reality. And that's about sort of, fast-tracking permits and all this outdoor living we're going to do this summer. Well, it's not easy, folks. I've been doing that for a long time. And it's not an easy thing to just turn and start doing when it's, and I think that's what I fear for restaurants and cafes, is that I don't know how that's going to be possible in a practical sense. And so therefore we've got to do it together and open up and make that a reality, because we're sure as hell determined to get them back on their feet.
After such a huge change for the global society, what's your hope moving forward beyond this pandemic?
I think the rule book's kind of gone out the window, isn't it? And which I think is a good thing in a lot of ways. We've got very set in our ways and our habits and of what was the norm, what were our structures and our kind of what we thought was important. And now I think we've got perhaps a new landscape to just work it out afresh of what's really important. And I hope that means we're looking more in our industry at all parts of the sector, and that when we talk about rhetoric, yes, we all want to know where our food comes from. Easy to say, but not necessarily what we follow through with. And that's from us as individuals, for all sorts of reasons. There are barriers and challenges, but we can try. And we're learning, how satisfying it is to grow things ourselves and to make our bread, and it doesn't mean that it takes away from anyone else. It just means that we understand it better. It's this subliminal, educational, experiential education that you can't buy it. You learn it through interaction and genuine involvement in things. And so I just hope we come together and continue to keep learning and to keep sharing the simple things and enjoying our cooking and our sharing and as well as getting out there and getting right back into restaurants and everywhere else to so that we rebuild together.
Well, Miranda, what you've done for so many in the food industry is quite extraordinary, and we're honoured to have you on Deep in the Weeds today. Please keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Huck.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.